House of Rugby Ireland, here on Joe. Game changed.
Well, that was a disaster for two of us in the studio, at least. The box winning. Shawnee, where were you watching it, lining your pockets yesterday?
I was in Worcester, in Sixway Stadium, would you believe. Not overly big of a crowd there because of the weather. There was a black cloud hanging over us for the day, but very interesting all the same to watch it. And no better man than a fella sitting beside me here to know about the Springboks and Bob Skinstad. Oh, and I'll do that again.
There we are. Let's carry on though. Well, on this week's House of Rugby powered by Vodafone, we do have Bob Skinstad. Got there, the legendary Springbok World Cup winner. Where did you watch it?
I was actually so tense. I watched it at home. My wife was sort of involved in looking over my shoulder a little bit, but I've got two young boys who are watching the rugby, so I didn't want to be anywhere near a pub or a high street where I'd be shouted out of the place if the Springboks didn't turn up. As it turned out, it was okay. We celebrated on our own.
Were the boys wearing sort of Springbok jerseys and everything?
They still wear the green and gold, can you believe it? But you know, been here long enough for them to have, I suppose, justifiably worn the Lions jersey if they wanted to, but they were supporting the Springboks.
And Shawnee, we weren't shocked by the backlash from the Springboks. I mean, they came out with a bit of ferocity there.
Yeah, they did. First kind of 15, 20 minutes, I thought the Lions played pretty well. But once the Springboks got a hold of them, I think they controlled the game incredibly well. Got on top at set piece, which was massive, obviously. And kind of won all the scraps and the tap backs from kicks, and won the aerial battle, I thought, a little bit as well. And just kept a lot of pressure on the Lions and didn't let us kind of come up for air at all in that second half, which was hugely impressive. And, you know, you talk about Springboks not having much game time before this game. They were way, way stronger at the end of the game yesterday. And I think, worryingly, going forward, they're only going to get better.
Well, before we get into too much detail on that, Razzie's rant, masterstroke. I mean, what's the feeling there?
I mean, I think, you know, we've spoken. It's a war. You know what it's like. You're trying to win a series at all costs. So you do whatever you have to help the team do that. One, he got the attention off the players, which I think was vital this week, because the players got, you know, whether it's egos or bodies, it doesn't matter, but bruised by the Lions in the first test, and justifiably so, would have had to reflect and go back in and say, how do we change this? So he got all of the focus off them onto himself. I think his video was completely over the top, but I think he had a few good points. If he made 27 points, he, you know, 26 of them were probably on point. But that was a go at the level of refereeing or level of adjudicating, etc., etc. It wasn't a go at the Lions themselves. It wasn't a go at Gats, etc. But it created the stink around it that people could talk about that till the cows came home. And I think the players could focus on the strategy for this weekend. And I think in the first match they got outthought and outplayed, and in the second match South Africa outthought and outplayed, you know, the reverse.
Yeah, I think the only thing for me in terms of his rant was, we want to encourage more and more people to be referees. It's hard enough being a referee in this day and age, the speed of the athletes, the breakdown, it's so hard. And I felt like he just went over the top a bit in sort of his criticism of the ref. If you weren't happy about how it went, then, you know, speak to him behind closed doors, have that conversation. I know he's saying that they weren't listening, but rugby has always been about sportsmanship and, you know, looking after the refs and being polite and, you know, not having a go at them and not having that in our game. And I just think he went over the line a bit there. Even if you are unhappy, you can't be criticising the refs like that so publicly. But, I mean, you've had a few run-ins with refs, Shawnee. Yeah.
What do you mean? I have a great relationship with referees. Always had.
Yeah?
Well, the majority of them anyway. I thought publicly it was probably not the right place to go so far with it, but those reviews happen all the time after games. Even as players, you'd go to your DOR or the head coach after a game and say, look, can we show the ref this picture this week and see what he thinks, or the referee board, whatever it may be, and come back with some feedback to us. The way we know what's happening and what they're thinking as well as players. But you know, it was a masterstroke, I think. He took the, as you said, he took the all attention away from the players. You know, the whole media hype all week was about Razzie. Nothing else. There wasn't anything about the Springbok players that who underperformed in the first test.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it was he does things differently. But, you know, I don't see a whole lot wrong with what he done. He would do that normally, I'd say, behind closed doors. It was just the fact that it was so public that caused this explosion as such.
The only thing I would add, and you're 100% right, we do want to encourage kids to become referees and it's an important part of the game, etc. I still think, you know, rugby has a preserve where we do respect and look after the referees. You know, if it was football and we were swearing at and slagging off the referees, then that'd be different. You know, this is off the field, not in the 80 minutes. Within the 80 minutes, they were very respectful. I thought the referee was really good, actually. I thought he controlled the game under all that pressure, controlled the game very, very well. He gave both captains a talking to quite early on, which managed the game very well. But I think you're both right. You know, you are going to dissect the game somehow, but it's probably not for public consumption. I do think that was the salvo he had to fire. You know, Springboks are back against the wall. If they'd lost that test, everybody would have been saying, well, you know, is this team the rightful world champions? Is, you know, is Russia as good, etc.? So he had to do something and he did it and it worked.
Do you think that was his dice roll? Is that was his sort of like, this is the last chance, obviously?
Yeah, I think it was one of them. I mean, certainly he had his, you know, strategy and other things he was going to change in the game, but he had to take the focus off the fact that South Africa are the big bruising team and, you know, not let that allow the referees to sort of swing it in the favour of the Lions. I mean, in the first test match, Lions won fair and square, in my opinion, but South Africa had, I mean, probably seven or eight things against them, which could have been 50-50 calls. So I think the Lions would have won that test match anyway, but you could dissect those for years to come, you know, and If that had happened this weekend and South Africa had lost, Rassie would have kicked himself saying, I should have said something to try and change it. I don't think it affected the referee's decisions as much, but I certainly think it gave a fair assessment from the adjudicators.
On a side note, obviously you know Rassie pretty well. I mean, I don't know if you played with him, mm-hmm. or, you know him pretty well. You know, what's he like in this sense? Because we sort of get a flavour in social media, but what's he really like?
Look, I mean, I played with him. We competed for the same position, so we weren't friends when we played together. But
you won that one, by the way.
Well, I think the thing you got to remember about Rassie, he's his ultimate competitor. Absolutely loves rugby, loves competing, loves winning at rugby, and has done it in the different teams he's been to all over the world. So, you know, we can't sort of contest whether he's a good coach or not. Whether he's good at where he spends his time on social media, I can't be the judge of. I think it's come out that this week that's spilt over. I do think he is a very, very astute, very smart judge of the game and what influences the game. I think he's taken a leaf out of Gatz's book and understood that some of the work as a coach is to deflect that pressure off the players. And, you know, Gatz with his comments the week before the first test was very smart about that, you know, saying poor old Marius Jonker, he's been put under such pressure and the poor guy, which I thought was clever, you know, and I wouldn't hold it against Gatz, like I wouldn't hold this against Rassie. I do think that he is a guy who thinks sort of at least three or four steps ahead. I think he would have been planning what they were going to do in the second test with a view to what they're going to try and do in the third test. So I think South Africa will be better prepared than they were in the first. Just hoping for their sake that his prep doesn't get sort of sorted out by whether it's conditioning or injuries or something like that. I think it's, you know, all to play for in the third. So exciting.
Yeah. And I mean, Shawnee, the play wouldn't have affected the Lions players, though, would it? What's happening in the South African camp, it has no effect on those boys, does it?
No, I think they would have had a little bit of entertainment with it during the week, I'd say, in their small groups and around camp. There would have been a bit of a laugh about it, I think, of how extreme it went to. But they would have been just focusing on themselves. Gatz would have had them teed up as well as to make sure nothing was being said in camp or around the camp about that. So it would have been just eyes on the prize, but unfortunately the prize didn't arrive yesterday, so we've another game to go.
Yeah, but the game obviously did lack a bit of rhythm to it or flow. I mean, it lasted 2 hours, 15 minutes, a lot of stoppages. The breakdown was a bit of a mess, as we spoke about. Is that just because it's a tight test match between two teams who are desperate to win? Or
I think so. I mean, I think it's a game of who can make the least mistakes these days. You know, it's a test match. Everything's on the line. We've got big physical packs. You've got big physical inside backs. Good, great finishers, but they're not getting that much of the ball. So I think, you know, the almost the reluctance to try something too far out the box. What we did see in the match was every time South Africa had an advantage, you know, penalty advantage, then suddenly two, three, you know, quick passes and they tried to attack. So we saw glimpses of what could happen, but it wasn't going to happen unless they had the backup of having an advantage.
I understand test rugby nowadays, but this, something has to be done about the length of the game, how slow it was. Not very good to watch at the minute. Mm. And that's just test rugby at the minute. But with the two teams that the Springboks have and the Lions have, surely they want to play a little bit more. Like, they're so dangerous, such dangerous players on the field, such exciting players on the field. And I'm hoping, obviously, I think there'll be changes next week. We'll get on to that a little bit later. But I'm hoping we just play a little bit more and you know, take a few risks to because we have the players to do it. And the Springboks on the flip side, like, get the ball into Colby's hands, get the ball out wide, and let these boys like to play us up and get a bit of excitement into the game.
But to be honest, I thought the Springboks at times did try it. You know, they were braver than I thought they would be. Like, the week before, they just hit everything through 12, crashed up, slowed down, kicked it. At least this week, you know, from a scrum, they moved it out wide and then kicked down the line and they won a penalty off Hogg. And they actually were a bit braver to throw a couple of passes. And then even if they kicked on the outside or got on the front foot first and then kicked it, they just showed that bravery to play, go on the front foot, and then their kicking game was better off the back of it. So, like, I think that's the blueprint. You have to at least try and move the opposition around first, then manipulate the backfield and then kick, so they're in a more, you know, more isolated position. Well, certainly.
Yeah, looking yesterday as well, I was kind of thinking, why haven't the Lions tried to move this big Springbok pack around as well? They haven't brought them through phases in terms of like make them get up and down off the ground, make them tackle you, like time and time again.
Runners,
yeah, a lot of one-off stuff. Like, bring them around the field a little bit and then see where, then try and break them with something. And like, well, for me anyway, anytime I've ever played the Springboks, you have to physically match them, but you have to move them around and you have to be smart then with obviously turning them around, kicking in behind them, defensively sound, breakdown unbelievable. But we just haven't got on top in those areas in terms of actually testing them out and making, forcing errors onto them where they'd on the opposite of the lines yesterday, I think.
The key is in test rugby is you trying to get one-on-one tackles or weak shoulders, and too many times, and whether it's just not enough time together, you know, lack of structure and organisation because the time they've had on feet is so limited for the Lions, but it never seemed like they were ever able to get one-on-one tackles or half shoulders. Always into two Springboks, getting smashed, slow ball, then trying to generate quick ball so hard against, you know, 13, 14 men in the front line. And the Lions, I thought, stayed very similar to the first test. While the Springboks got better and more organised and more rhythm to their game, the Lions still are struggling to get three, four phases together where they look like they know what they're doing. And that's the biggest worry for me, is in the attack game, they can't seem to get the centres working together. They can't seem to get back rowers out, running a couple of, you know, plays where you go one hard and one out the back.
Or even a tip anything. On, just moving the point of contact a little bit against these bigger boys.
But there was a glimpse of that. There was that, I'm not sure if it was an advantage run, but you would have, as an outside back, you would have seen it. There was a lovely little flick on, I think, back to Henshaw around, and I thought, oh, here we go. So there's something on, and then it sort of got snuffed out. I think it might have rolled out eventually, and then they went back for the penalty. That's right. It was under advantage. But you're right. I mean, maybe it's just that they need sort of two good things there and then two good things there. They need a little bit of that linking things together.
I probably think as well a lot of it, Bob, is based off not getting over the gain line for the Lions. Mm. So if we're making dints in their defensive line, then we have the opportunity to actually play on top of them a little bit. But at the weekend, we're just getting stopped on the gain line, biggers dropping back, then we're into an aerial contest straight away. Rather than, I'd like to see us play a little bit more shape, play a little bit more tempo,
yeah.
Few tip-ons, use our hands a little bit and see can we get in behind them a little bit and then play. But at the minute, it is tough because you're running against big, big boys who are defensively so sound and it's hard to get over the game line.
The blueprint for me was that the end of the first test, the Lions were much cleverer in the sense that they went from maul, they went off the top, and then they started to do, you know, like a fake maul. So you go into the maul position, you had Jack Cohen out, and then the flanker passes to the eight, getting into the crease. And it just got them 5 yards over the gain line with Conan carrying, and then Murray kicked, and you left their backfield slightly exposed. We win the ball back, you're in that territory battle, because ultimately these games have become a territory battle. If you get into the opposition 22, you get there, you get 3 points, or as the Springboks did, they got 2 tries from it, and that's key. But no team wants to play rugby around the halfway line or in your own half, so it's about winning that territory battle, but it comes from that bravery to do something slightly different. You've got to get into the crease or the back of the line out before the 10 comes up, which is obviously easy yards, or you have to be brave to try and go wide, go on the front foot, just to give your forwards a chance to carry the next phase. And I think that's where the Lions have to look at themselves and go, right, you know, Springboks were better, but we need to find ways to dent this Springbok defensive line.
You're not going to win a game, one, you know, not getting over the gain line. And the second thing then is their discipline as well. And I thought yesterday the discipline was very poor, especially in the second half when the bench came on and stuff. Just silly, silly penalties. And in that environment, you give away penalties to the likes of the Springboks. They're kicking out. They're going back to what they know. That's their line-out drive. They're suffocating you then and they're putting you under all sorts of pressure. So those two things for me, if we can get over the gain line a little bit and pull the trigger when we need to and then sort out our discipline, the silly stuff, like there's going to be penalties in the game. We'll be in a much better place. And we won't give them that kind of foothold they had in the last 20 minutes of the game where they just error after error by the Lions and then Springboks, maul, scrum, everything was clicking for them, going well. Very hard to get back in the game.
Let's talk about how the Box won it. You know, were they just smarter this week than last week, or how did they get on top of the Lions in that sense?
I think a couple of players really stood up. Ibn Itabith was good and physical and smart this week, whereas last week he was physical as usual but not so smart. He gave away a few penalties. He gave away one maul penalty this one, which I was really frustrated with and for him. But he worked his way through the maul, got his hands on the ball, and the referee said, yes, it's a maul, so you know you are going to win it. And then he pulled that maul to ground and gave it back to the line. So that was his only real mistake that I saw. Everything else was on point. I really feel that Sia Khaleesi was outstanding. Lots of little contributions. So he's not the kind of guy, Sia, that is going to run 30 yards, you know, or be the big focus of one big smash tackle. But I think he made the most tackles, 14, most other contributions, 18. You know, that means 30-odd times he's been out there doing something that fractures what the Lions are using to go forward or get their go forward. So he was outstanding. And then I feel that Mostert was brilliant. He just didn't stop. He's obviously got a big, big engine, but he moved from lock to flank and then was still putting himself about the place in the 79th minute. So I was really impressed with him.
Did they use the bomb squad better this week?
Absolutely.
Did they get
absolutely
that right?
Yeah, they got it right this week. You know, 61 minutes, was it? Or just 60 minutes, maybe. And it improved them. And that's the big thing. That's what they're there for. That's what was so effective during the World Cup for them. So they definitely got the tactics there right this week.
And they all had little Mark's winning a penalty and Nyakani with a scrum. They all did little bits where you could actually see it so they could celebrate
impact,
it.
Exactly. Yeah. I thought, just talking about Mozart there, I thought he was phenomenal yesterday. But I knew at the start of the game that the Springboks were different animals this week. You could see it in their faces. They wanted it a lot more. They were a little bit back to, especially the second row, is the boys who you want physically. Like they had this look in their eyes that we're not taking a backward step today. So they'll be happy with that element of all those bits and pieces of the game. But they'll have to do it again next week.
And do you think that the injury actually helped South Africa with Mozart going to
Mozart?
Yeah, Mozart.
Monday Mozart of the second row.
Yeah. Going to flank. Do you think that actually had a good effect in terms of the line out and the way it worked?
I do. And I've got to say this because I'm not close enough to the squad, but I think it was fortuitous. I don't think they thought that that's how it was going to work out. I mean, they've obviously done their prep because they had a you know, they only had two backs on the bench, and who was going to come on? They had a proper out and out open side on the bench, Finn Staden. And I thought, you're going to have Quagga Smith, Finn Staden. You're going to have no line out options, really. You're going to have all the short guys who. But then when they moved Mostert to flank, suddenly they had three contesting guys, and you can chuck Mostert up at the back, or you could, you know, you can get the other guys to be supporting him, or he can be a supporter, which means that the locks can go up even higher. So it really worked in terms of shoring up the line out. I feel that they'd lost the line out to that point. They got it back, then they got the driving maul going, then Marks is at the back of that. So it really helped. If it was on purpose, it was a piece of genius. If it was not on purpose and it was because of the way the injuries worked, then it was a great piece of luck.
Shawnee, should it have been a yellow Faf's tackle? And we'll get on to Colby, yellow or red for you?
Faf's, to be honest, hardly going to yellow or nine for that, are you? That's what the rest is probably
she's
thinking.
Saying that because he's a bit smaller, he's yeah. going to let him get away with anything.
Well, I think if it's a back rower that goes in like that, kind of as loosely like that, because he's just firing himself at him, it could be potentially a yellow or a penalty. Probably maybe a penalty, but I wouldn't say a yellow. And then Cheslin, very, very lucky to stay on the field, I think. I think if Moore comes down, if Connor comes down on his head or neck, it's an automatic red. And
does he not though? I know he puts his hand down, but
he puts his hand down and he comes down kind of front ways, but by the letter of the law,
it shouldn't be up to him to put his hand down. It should be, you got to be the one thing I would say for him, he is only a little fella and Bigger's running across, so he can't get into the air. He would have contested, he can't jump because he's got to run around Bigger, and then you can see, I mean, I don't think he's gone in with his hands and scooped his.
No.
You know, the legs have gone against his. It's absolute yellow card, quite possibly a red. I'm with you, but, you know, yellow with a yellow card, you can't be disappointed. At least it wasn't just a penalty, because then everyone would have said, well, that's, you know, that's been unfair.
Yeah. All I would say, as devil's advocate on that, is as a winger, Colby chases more kicks than anyone else. He does that a lot. He gets up defensive himself. He should know better, that he knows that if you go charging after the ball, it's not like it's a prop or second row just charging up field, not even looking.
But I'm saying it was impossible to get into the air to contest that. He couldn't, agreed, he couldn't run around Bigger.
But then he should know at that point to pull out, you know, because he can't, if you can't get up in the air and you're running like that, you are running the risk, of taking someone out.
Yeah,
and
no, you're right.
Is it he would know better than most players in the field.
Yeah.
Like I know if I'm chasing after the ball, if you can't get up in the air, you're blocked.
Yeah, make you sure you don't
pull out
touch
or you wait. Because you know if you take someone out in the air now, if they land badly, it's a straight red.
To be honest, I think a lot of people should think like that more is, you know, Conor Murray's gone up for the ball. He's going to land 10 centimetres inside the field of play.
Mm.
Okay. So wait and push him out.
Bang him out,
you know, and have a line out. I mean, I don't know why you're contesting it. You're not going to get a better ball from that anyway. Yeah. So I think players could manage that whole situation better.
He's lucky.
Yeah, he is.
He's lucky.
Yeah, but then, of course, you say the other side was Hamish Watson was lucky not to get yellow last
week. Yeah, exactly. So yeah, 100%.
These things go around. Yeah. But I was surprised when the referee said he landed on his back. I was like...
We'll see if Gats brings out a video now with all these clips.
he's got an hour, 2 minutes to beat.
Yeah. Or Steve Tandy just starts putting a fake Twitter account up there. Yeah. But we'll see. But surely we're on to our favourite part of the show. Yeah, take it away here, the Brandy segment. Oh, mate, you're starring role here.
You take it away there. You can see what it
is. But you had the most watched video ever on Joe, I think, wasn't it?
Yeah, well, that's...
You're Ron Burgundy.
That's because I made a mess of it.
Well, here we go. Well, now, during the course of the series, as you know, subscribers to the official British and Irish Lions app, powered by Vodafone, are voting for their player of the series. After Saturday night, who gets your vote and why? So far, the player of the series votes. Hamish Watson is still number one. Doohan van der Merwe, 2. Maratoji, 3. Josh Adams, and then Courtney Laws. Sean, do you think there's going to be many changes to that?
I think
interesting that Hamish is still number one, having, you know, come off the bench and not played in the second
season. It's probably, you're going to give it to someone who's played in all the test games, aren't you? Yeah. Realistically, hopefully someone wins it from the test team.
Yeah, we say so.
But yeah, there's going to be a few changes, I think, in that, because next week will be, someone will stand up next week. You have Courtney in there, you have Maro in there. I don't think Doohan will be playing next week. I think there'll be changes there.
Bob, with your Lions cap on, who's impressed you in the series so far? Obviously, one more to go.
Look, in the first test, Murrow and Courtney Laws. I thought Courtney Laws was brilliant with his carries and contributions. I think Murrow's been there all the way through. You know, he's right up there with Courtney in the first test. He was big in the second as well. I think Luke Kahn-Dickey's actually playing very well. I mean, he's a bit of a bolter, but he's justified his selection, and I'm not sure that, you know, in the third test they'll go for all the same players. I'm sure we'll see a bit shake-up, but those guys have got to be, you know, head and shoulders above everybody else in terms of the number of contributions they've made and how they've been playing.
Head over to the official British and Irish Lions app, Pablo Vodafone, to cast your vote. Back to the series here. Momentum, surely, with the box at the moment?
I think so. I mean, I think, you know, you want to go on and play the third test the way they finished the second test. But, you know, there's a lot of rest time in between. There's a lot of changes that will come from the Lions. I'm sure there'll be some media blow-ups. There'll be a few interesting things in the week. So, for me, it's the players that just got to absolutely shelter themselves from any view of that, rejig what was working for them, so that you can start with that to come out of the blocks. And then just know that you're in for... It's not 80 minutes anymore. It's 2 hours, 15 yeah, minutes of a slog,
yeah.
And you're going to be in for as big a slog as ever. So if you've got it in you, then put your name on the board and go with absolutely everything. It's all to play for.
And if you're the Springboks, how will they be looking at this week in terms of how they assess how they played? Obviously played well, but going forward, what will be their sort of way of looking at the game?
I think they'll definitely look at that. Bomb squad sort of interchange and say that worked. We don't want what happened in the first test, so let's get that right. We just don't know yet about you know, injuries, how much they're going to affect the individuals who start and then can come in and change. But I think the Springboks will turn around to themselves and say, look, guys, we played better, but we were more disciplined as well. If we do both of those things, we're in with a chance of winning the series. And their preparation is going to have to be on point, because there'll be a Lions backlash. Mm-hmm. You know, the Lions have got more players to choose from. Gatlin can turn around. He could change 14 players here and still have an outstanding international team. And with players who come in and say, well, I've rested for 2 weeks. I'm fresh, you know, fresh as can be, and I'm going to throw it at them. We don't know that he doesn't do something like that.
Yeah, they have a point to prove as well. For the Lions, is there anything they can cling to from that game to take forward?
I think they can cling to a few things in the first half, for sure, in terms of the aerial threat within the 22, actually. That first kick, Bigger put up. Put serious heat on. They knocked it on. We got a 5 meter scrum. So there's a few bits like that we actually got up and were competitive in. I do think, though, the biggest thing is trying to get over the gain line, and then get back dominance of set piece, because without set piece going into this third test, if we're a second fiddle there, it's Springboks all the way.
So is Gatz's roll the dice now changes? How many changes you make? Yeah, you change?
I think there's going to be a good few changes. I think Liam Williams will come in. I think Josh Adams will come in. I think that could be the back three.
Whoa. Let's focus on your area of expertise, mate. You know,
back
not the back three.
Obviously.
You don't get in the backfield very often.
Attack.
Yeah. Let's just talk about mauling and choke tackles, shall we? No. Talk about the forwards first. How would you change?
I see the front five probably saying exactly the same.
Mm-hmm. Because they did pretty well early on.
Yeah, I do wonder if Wyn Jones is fit, whether he'll come onto the bench. I wonder about that. I think the back row, I think Toby will start at 8. I think he'll just start him at 8 this week and let him see what he does. Even though Jack showed up yesterday in a team that wasn't firing well, and he still kept showing up and offering. But I just think, knowing Gatz, I think he'll change that area this week. I think he'll leave Courtney there, but I think he needs a big performance like he did in the first test. Just get his hands on more ball, use his feet for a big man and his physicality. I think Curry's just a shoe in at 7. And then the bench, in terms of the back row, whether he goes with what he done in the first test and bring in Byrne and Watson.
Mm-hmm. But
yeah, I can't see too much else changing, to be honest.
Do you think they need someone like Watson on the bench? Something very different? Something he just offers something in attack in terms of his carrying, his ability just to be a nuisance at breakdown?
Yeah, and just his general energy when he comes on. You get a bit of a lift when you have someone that mobile and energetic when you come on. He's next to me, he's chopping someone behind his gain line, and you know what I mean? You're not on the back foot straight away. The only difficulty is, you know, where does he slot in when he comes on? Do you take off Curry? Do you just do a straight swap? Or do you put Curry to six and Hamish to seven?
Byrne can come on, be a line-out option, line-out lifting option. Watson is a proper breakaway.
Yeah.
You know, it's hard.
So it's hard to know where he fits in and depend on how lads are going. But I think they might go back that way, to be fair.
Well, you could always put Hamish at seven and put Curry to eight as you wanted to do before the first test. But... You know, I just think when it gets tight in those moments, you just need something to just be a catalyst. You know, we're talking about getting home the gain line. You know, Hamish Watson beat the most defenders in the Six Nations, I think, with his carrying.
Well, he was a catalyst in the Six Nations with his carrying and with his stealing the ball on the ground. So, I mean, that turned a couple of games for Scotland. You're right. That's what you need.
And everyone talks about his size, right, and all this stuff. And it doesn't matter when he uses his feet and his strength and uses what he's good at. He's able to bounce off players. You know what I mean? Mm. So... And in fact, actually, it's probably harder for the Springboks to get a hold of someone smaller.
I was going to say, it's quite effective. Bring him on, see if they get yellow card. Yeah, exactly. Goes that low to the ground. Take someone's head off.
So we'll see. We'll see in that area. But I think that could be the only few kind of bits and pieces that he'll have to think about in terms of the pack this week.
And I think my feeling, and obviously you know nothing about forwards, but a lot of talk about going to a 6-2 for the Lions. For me... I don't see the point. If you know you're going to play 80 minutes for Marrow and Alan Wynne-Jones, I don't see the point of having a 6-2 split. If you were going to say, well, we're going to take Alan Wynne or Marrow off with 20 to go, then you could look at having a Henderson or Beard on the bench. But it seems like they want to play those two guys throughout. So cover the back row for me and just crack on.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think the Lions have got too many talented backline players to leave it, you know, everybody out and do a 6-2, you know, when you don't know which ones you're going to use. And to be honest, if you had a big injury in one of those positions of two, then there's real trouble. Mm-hmm. You know, so I don't think it'll go that way. But I mean, just chatting to you guys and understanding a bit more about Gats and the fact that he's willing to roll the dice. You know, he did it with Dricko. He's done it a few times with the Wales side. He's actually brought Faletau back, you know, with no game time, and then he's been a sort of a game influencer, a game winner for him. So maybe that does influence his selection. I just think that if we're going to see big changes or smart changes, they'll come from someone like Gats, and it'll be in a line series with the last test up for grabs.
Well, in 2013, obviously he lost the second test and he made seven changes. And we're talking about not making too many changes in the forwards. But for me, I think it's the back line that the most of the changes will come. You mentioned Liam Williams, Josh Adams. Obviously, I've banged the drum about Liam Williams throughout this series, and I just think he is absolute star quality, but most importantly, he is the best aerial player we have in the Lions team, possibly the best in the Northern Hemisphere and in the world at the moment, and he has to play at fullback. I thought Hogg struggled. You know, it wasn't just the high balls for me. He's obviously a brilliant player for Scotland. He's a great attacker. It's not one of those test series, and you need someone...
He's not giving the ball in space, is he?
No. And I think as well, I think he'd be disappointed with the tackle on Mpimpi. He'd be disappointed in some of his... rucking particularly. There's a couple of rucks. He just lost the race and then struggled and there was turnovers. So for me, I would play Williams at fullback and I have Josh Adams on the wing for Doohan van der Merwe. I just think the fact that they know each other well, Adams and Williams, is important and again, very good in the air. And then keep Murray at nine. I would probably go with Farrell at 10. Just games on the line. I think, obviously I know him well, I think he's the man to drag us through for the Lions, and also just in the week leading up to it, I think he's just so important in terms of his voice, leadership, you know, really bringing the momentum back to the Lions and giving them confidence.
It's very different language to what the players this side were using last week, you know, someone to drag them through as opposed to smash the Springboks. Like, but you're right, the pressure at 1-1 is very different to 1-0. Yeah. So do you think that'll affect those final decisions? Do you think he will go to an own because he's had so much good experience at a big pressure game?
Well, I don't know Dan Bigger as well, but I think Gatlin knows what Owen's like, you know, in terms of as a young kid in 2013, he was impressed with just, you know, his maturity. But in 2017, you know, when the game was on the line, you know, you were out there, you know, his leadership, his ability to kick those goals when it really, really mattered. And that could be the difference in that final test, is just that 3 points or that kick that just gives you a bit of a buffer and forces South Africa to chase the game or something like that. So, look, I would go with him. And then I would probably go with Bundiaki and Henshaw in the middle, just because we need to dent the line somewhere. And we know what the South Africans are bringing. They won't change, but we need to dent the line, go through them first and foremost. We've tried to try and go outside them. We're not getting the momentum any other way. Yeah. So I would go for them through the middle, personally. Yeah. I don't know what your thoughts on that.
Yeah, I'd agree with that as well. I felt a bit sorry for Chris Harris because He hasn't put a foot wrong on.
No, he hasn't.
They haven't got him the ball either that he needs. But defensively, unbelievable at the weekend again. But I do think to get over the gain line, to get just in behind him, even if it's a yard or a couple of feet initially, as you say, those first couple of phases, we need someone to get over a gain line, and Bundy's probably our best bet there. Just hit him nice and early, let him run hard, you know, and we just get moving quickly. But depends on what type of game plan they're going to play, though. Are the Lions going to play the same type of kicking game initially at the start of the third test? All these questions will be going through the coach's head, but the rest of us here will be wondering what way we're going to try and play the weekend.
But I don't think you can change the way you can play just in one test match drastically. You can't go from having this kind of kicking approach, sort of like trying to win the territory game, to suddenly go really expansive and go wide.
I don't think it's going to be really expansive, but Are we just going to have a crack?
But with a change of personnel, you can change a bit.
Yeah,
you know, like I just felt if you look at that Springbok backline, when, you know, let's just say they give it to Dan and he's going forward. Even if he's not smashing over Henshaw, he's staying up. So he's, you know, bounce one a bit like Shauna when he got the ball. It's hard to get him onto the ground quickly, which means you can't steal the ball when he's on the ground. So if Bundy can do that for them, then maybe that momentum, you know, a bit more time, like you said, go around the corner after that, maybe that works. But I don't think it'll be willy-nilly, you know, flicking the ball around playing touch rugby. No. It'll be a few changes.
It took two or three, well, it takes definitely two defenders to land even on that shit. Even when he's in that high position, he's still fighting. And like, you have to go in and wrestle with him.
Wrestle him down, you're right.
For that few seconds. So that kind of could be the same with Bundy. So I see that probably happening.
But I think defensively, if you look at Owen Farrell, Bundiaki, Henshaw, it's probably the most physical three you can have in that role. And I know you say, oh, we're taking South Africans on at their own game, but reality is, if you can stop them in that first two phases, it does make it a lot harder.
It doesn't make it not a running game. I mean, Aki's got a great distribution. You know, Farrell's got a good distribution. Henshaw's a runner. You know, they're just big.
Yeah.
You're right. But they haven't played together, though. Are those three for ages, so it also adds a risk,
but the centres have, and that's the key. Is you go into the last test and they know each other well, they play together, they've got a partnership, and I think, is, you know, before you had Henshaw as the main carrier and you were meant to be using or seeing Duhan van der Merwe carrying, we haven't seen that. You know, they haven't seemed to have got him over the game line or got him the ball enough, so at least there you have two carriers. It's not just Aki coming the whole time, you have Henshaw with him, it gives some deception, or you play Farrell out the back and then you try and move it, and then Liam Williams hits a hard line, as he does so well. So I think there's strike runners there, but also people to dent the line for me. South Africa, you know, for you, would you make any changes?
It's a tough one. I just don't know enough about the personnel and the injuries. I think not on pure performance. I think they got the front row right, tight five right. I think they got the loose forwards right. I thought Visser was good. You know, he was amazing with carries when he played over here. I think he smashed a few players back. He made that one silly mistake where, you know, King the kick.
That was a big moment, actually.
His schoolboy teacher would be, you know, wagging the finger at him like that. And he knows that, but I think he was there, and he made enough of a go of it to keep his position. I think the safest place for Quaker Smith is the bench, because if they do the same split, he's fast enough to play, to sit on the wing if he has to. Mm-hmm. He's played scrum off in sevens. You know, it sounds silly, but and he doesn't look like it, but he is a deft passing back. I mean, he's a
seven. I'd like to see his box kick, sir.
Yeah.
I did hear a little rumour during the week that we could see the main man back at number 8.
Dwayne Vermeulen. I mean, I think South Africa would they'd give an arm and a leg of another player to have him playing. But wow, he is a proper player. Yeah.
And a massive leader for the Springboks. Yeah. More than anything, even if he wasn't 100% fit, which of course he couldn't be, as a leadership role, he would be massive. And people to look to him and go, like, he's our man.
Yeah. The only other area that could potentially change, but I don't think it will, is Willie LaRue. I think he's not playing as well as he could. Yeah, I think he's a fantastic rugby player in free-flowing games when he's got momentum, when he's going forward. I think he's been a little bit hesitant and holding back a little bit, but, you know, are you going to change him for a Damian Delenda? Nobody else in South Africa has put their hand up as much as he has. In the World Cup final, he was terrible against Wales and he was amazing in the final. Will he stand up? I hope so. I don't think he'll drop
it. I don't think he's playing his best at all, but he is so key, and Hrassi loves him just for his kicking game alone.
Exactly.
Left foot and just kicks everything. He's defensive.
No, he's a class player. I'm not saying he's not a class player. Yeah. Just, I don't think he's had the series of his life.
No.
But I certainly wouldn't change him before the final.
And tough for all back three players at the minute, to be fair, on both sides.
You're right.
I'm giving stick to him. It looks like a bloody nightmare.
I think we could play a back row, Bobby.
We might have to, in the backfield at the minute. Go through them so quickly.
Yeah, exactly. Well, look, talking about Lions now, training-wise, how do they get that confidence back this week?
I think this week in training, I think it'll be very light. I think they'll name the team pretty early. I think in a few changes that'll come in, I reckon will freshen up the whole setup, bring a bit of energy to the place. I think the lads will obviously be disappointed with yesterday, so you'll need that around the place. You'll need a little bit of crack, a little bit of freshness. It'll just be an exciting week for the boys now this week. It'll be, you know, it's one all. All to play for now in the last test. It's going to be a good week, and one which all those boys will be relishing. Gats won't say too much this week. He'll leave it to the boys. He'll leave it to Alan Wynn and the leaders, the Fazzes and these boys, and let's hope it's a great week for them.
Yeah, let's hope it is a great week. But I think the senior players or the leaders, massive week. Just building that confidence back up, getting everyone on page as to the clarity of exactly what they're going after, what they want to do this week, and making it really simple so everyone can just give it everything. You know, it's the last game of the series. Just allow that clarity so no one's in doubt and they just throw the kitchen sink at it.
Yeah, I think that's actually the message that was in 2017 and 13. It was like, go out and have a crack here, a proper crack, because at the end of the day, it's a be-all and end-all. So if you're going out, you want to be going out in style.
But on that, it can't be too heavy. It can't be too heavy a message from Monday. Otherwise, it's just emotional baggage. Yeah. I mean, these guys are professional players. We know that. But all of us have played. You know, if on Monday you're going, whatever you do, don't lose, you know, you just go into this terrible spiral. So it's got to be, I love that, you know, the new player's got to bring something to the game that the individuals that they are will already mix it up a little bit, which is nice. And then the quality that we've seen so far from the Lions just got to enhance that, as opposed to going all pressure. I think that's where Gats's experience will come through, and some of the big senior players will go, we are not going to take this life or death from Monday. Life or death for the 80 minutes, but not necessarily in the week. So I think it's an exciting week for the guys.
But to be honest, do we think we're going to see anything from training, or is it just going to be mind games all week from Gats and Rassi? It's just a battle of the mind games here.
A little bit. Rassi's got a 1 hour, 2 minute record to break on that. Maybe Gats will do that. I don't think we'll see too much of that. We'll definitely have comments about the adjudicators. The pressure will be piled onto the referees again from both sides. I mean, the poor guys, they need a break after this. We could send them on for some holiday to a Mediterranean resort or whatever.
I think this week, isn't it, Mathieu Reynal this week, French ref. Yeah. So he will give zero shits about what they're saying. He'll just be
French.
I'm French. Yeah. I don't care what you say. I'm going to do it my way. And that is it, which is probably quite good, actually, for the final test, because he doesn't care if it's a home team, away team, what's being said. He's going to turn up and just referee it how he he sees it. So
yeah, I think that's great. The less that the referee is seen and affects the game, the better. This should be about the teams against each other within the confines of the white lines, not too much more.
Yeah, and slightly different here. I don't know if you've been seeing the sevens, both women and men, at the Olympics. We just thought we'd get your sevens Lions team, or your best Lions seven out there. I would go to Shawnee, but he's never played sevens. Bobby, I think you've played for South Africa a few times at sevens, so you're the only one of us to internationally play sevens.
I don't know if that makes me a selector.
Well, it does today. Lucky you. So if you were picking... I'll tell you what, when you pick a South African sevens team from the squad you've got at the moment, and we'll pick our Lions one to play against you.
Okay. Well, I'll start Kwaga Smith as captain, because he's got a Commonwealth gold medal for sevens.
Very handy.
Then I would, of the other loose forwards, who would I play? Because you need someone to have that prop there. So give me Jasper Visser at tight head. Kwaga Smith is hooker. Lucid Markov and Staden. Okay, yeah. So it's flankers.
Big front row that.
Yeah. I would have Fuff at scrum half, Damien Delendi at fly half.
Big again.
And then I would play. Cheslin Colby is a shoo-in.
Yeah. Like, I thought he'd be like, your O-half.
No. Well, that's the thing. You don't want him to get too much of the ball, because then they're close to him. But definitely, I mean, I think maybe, yeah, let's call it our back three. So okay. Between Damien at centre and Villiers at 10, Cheslin on one of the wings, and Makazoli Mapimpi with his pace on the other wing. So I think we'd be all right, actually, as a seventh.
Maybe Creel on the bench as well.
Yeah.
Yourself, will you go for the Lions?
I would go Jack Cornan.
Yeah. Your mate, of course.
Hamish.
Yep.
And Curry, actually.
Okay. Front row, yeah.
Wouldn't get Sam Simmons, surely, with his speed.
I know, I'd leave them boys.
I know you're still...
I'd put him on the bench.
I know you're still a bit annoyed that he broke his record against London Irish going a hat-trick, but surely he's got to be there somewhere.
I'd put him at half-back. Leave him there. Who else? Liam Williams, Stuart Hogg, Anthony Watson, Lewis Rees-Sammet.
Okay.
Nice. Who's your scrum half?
Yeah.
Oh...
He's just put four backs there.
I go
with Rees Sammet to scrum off. It's fine. Yeah, we'll take it.
Yeah. I don't think you can take.
He's so fast, Rees Sammet.
He's incredible.
Look like he's even going through the gears.
Hair stays the same as well. Like, he's going too quick. Surely he should be blown off. Yeah. I would blow off. There's a little bit of breeze. I would change the... I don't think you can compete with the South Africans up front. So I would go with a few more backs. I'd put Henshaw in at hooker, probably. And I think, I have maybe Elliot Daly as your fly half for that.
Yeah, he'd be good, actually.
Yeah, he would be good, yeah.
He can do a few restarts. Yeah. Jamie George would be the water boy and entertainment as well. So, good sevens player, but might be a bit quick.
Good tourist.
Good tourist. One of the all times. So there we have it. But Bob, just a bit about your life. Obviously a very colourful, interesting life and career. You started in 2007, just missed the Lions touring, I guess. But I want to just focus a bit on when you sort of went to Newport, sort of retired from international rugby, and then the choice to come back and win a World Cup medal.
Well, I mean, I was very lucky. I played sort of rugby in South Africa as it became professional. So coming overseas wasn't really an option then. We played domestic rugby, and when Super Rugby was still Super, it wasn't the not so super version now. And
the Cats then, didn't you?
Yeah, I had one season for the Cats, ashamedly so. But I really enjoyed rugby there and the domestic rugby we played, and then. I think as it became too professional, I sort of fell out of love with, just the grind, and I'd been studying and working anyway. So I came overseas and went to Newport, and then
What made you choose Newport, out of interest? It's not known as the most exotic place.
No, it's not.
Certainly not.
fantastic people and certainly not a bad place, but Newport wasn't chosen by me. It was chosen for me by agents going for wherever the biggest price ticket was. And
they showed you these beautiful beaches.
Exactly. The brochure didn't...
that were a couple of hours away.
Yeah, exactly. The brochure didn't show Rodney Parade at its finest. But I, you know, I loved it. Made a lot of friends there during that time, and then actually hung up the boots of professional rugby and came played for Richmond, amateur Richmond and Barbarians mainly. While I was working at an ad agency in town in London, and loved it. It was a sort of a recalibration for me. It was more, you know, I think I was 27, turning 28, and I sort of. I don't know. I just had to maybe trust myself to survive after rugby, and you know, proving that I could work, I could comply, I could fit in at a normal job, normal life, etc. Gave me a lot more confidence. Gave me a lot more understanding of what it's like for the random punters. All of my mates, the people who've gone through the normal mill and not necessarily had the rugby to help. And then when I was playing one of those games for the Barbarians, the Natal, it was the Sharks, the Natal Sharks coaching group, John Plumtree and Dick Muir and those guys came over and they were doing a tour. They were meeting up with a couple of players and they watched us play. I think we played England at the end of the year, that year, and they said, well, you know, we saw you play, and we're looking for an old, slow, loose forward. So, you know, would you ever be available?
That. Playing for the Barbarians, you still got it, flicking the ball out the back.
Well,
you know,
that's
a few
thing.
Kicks. They thought, oh,
that's the thing. I'm almost 100% certain they were looking for someone who could play seven and eight, but not necessarily who was going to push too hard for the team because they had quite a settled, loose trio, and I was lucky enough to fit in. To that role. So I went back to SA and played that season with the Sharks. And that gave us, we played the Bulls in the final, lost to the Bulls, heartbreak. Ali Brian Abana got to thank for an amazing try.
Steve Walsh isn't on your Christmas card list.
No, he's certainly not.
Any Sharks players.
Walsh adjusting his hair in the cameras. But anyway, it was, you know, they played really well and they were magnanimous in defeat and we formed quite a good core of the Springbok squad for that year. I think Jake White had chosen 90% of his squad by that stage anyway. He'd known the players for so long. But there were a couple of positions, mine being one of them. And I was definitely competing with Pierce Beese and a couple of other guys. And then Pierce Beese pulled out of that squad. He had a heart affliction or pulmonary affliction. And I was in the Springbok World Cup squad. So had a few games at the end of that year and was really lucky to be part of that being the ending of my rugby.
What was it like that World Cup? Obviously, you know, you want to win over in France, what it meant to the country, but to be in the squad, you know, so many leaders there.
It was amazing. I mean, the team were very well settled. A lot of people knew their positions. You know, Butch James had been the starting fly half for, I think, 2.5 years, you know, consecutively at that stage. John Smith was the starting hooker and had been for 5 years. Victor Matfield and Bucky Spurta had been starting locks for 4 years already. So it was a team that knew their way around the field, but also knew each other well and had played for each other for a number of years and played with each other for a number of years and played well. So we also had, I mean, you know, there were really talented players in all the positions. You know, we had Fruit Dupre at nine.
Incredible.
Best nine possible.
Unbelievable rugby player, you know, and just the accuracy of his kicking, of his pass. You know, very quiet guy, you know, doesn't say much, but just a leader by his actions. And then he had a pack that he could control at will because, you know, Victor would control that pack for him. And you know, Donnie and, you know, Bucky's big enforcers, so guys to smash the ball when you needed and protect you when the odds were down. So it was a really well-balanced team, but liked each other on and off the field. And we had a nice mix in the squad of young guys coming in. Franz Steyn was 20 years old. You know, I was on my way out, 31 years old at that stage, and there were a few sort of older players as well. So it was a really good balance. And we got on well. So it was a really enjoyable time.
Yeah, nice. And now living in England, have been here for 5 years, is it now?
Yes, second stint in the UK, really enjoying it.
Kids have an English accent yet? Or
my youngest definitely do. I'm not going to get away with anything when I go home.
English jersey on them next.
Yeah, well, I told you there were a couple of Springboks jerseys around my TV, but I think there are a few guys looking. If the halftime score had been any worse, they might have pulled on their Lions jersey. But they were fully supporting England in the Euro, so.
I think that's all that matters there.
Yeah, exactly.
Because Shawnee wasn't. He actually went back to Ireland when it was going on.
I definitely wasn't.
Yeah. Well, Bob, Shawnee, great to see you. Thanks for coming on.
Thanks very much for having me.
That is all we got time for on this week's House of Rugby, powered by Vodafone. I hope you enjoy listening or watching it.
House of Rugby Ireland, here on Joe. Game changed.